My Radio 1, Sean Tilly, with Sean Tilly.
From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1.
Sean Tilly. My Radio 1.
That's it for the UK Top 40, computer compiled by Gallup, and the show is produced by Roger Pusey. I'm Bruno Brooks. Thanks for listening. Have a nice night.
Radio 1.
Yes. The Top 40 show with Bruno Brooks was just one of a multitude of shows overseen by celebrated Radio 1 producer. Hello, Roger Pusey.
Hi, Sean. Nice to be here.
Roger, how lovely to see you. And I have to say, before we start this programme, thank you very much for being very, very nice to me when I was doing a few bits and bobs at the BBC World Service all those years ago.
Was I really?
Yes. Don't try and deny what a lovely man and encouraging you were.
Did you deserve it?
I don't know. I might let you down in the end, to be honest. But I well remember paying a visit to your office at Egton House, where the World Service programmes were produced out of, like Radio 1, of course, but it was a very different building you were in back in those early days of the network, wasn't it?
It was. When I joined the BBC, it was just before Radio 1 actually started, and I joined in what was called Popular Music Department, and it was a live music recording arm as opposed to gramophone department. And we were in a building in Bond Street called Aeolian Hall. I have no idea really what Aeolian Hall was originally, but it was very grand. You can imagine it in the 20s or something, and people walking up this wide staircase that went up from this enormous entrance hall. After that, it became more like a rabbit warren, but that's where we were to start with for Popular Music. And I was up on the fourth floor, and I shared an office with contemporaries of mine, Paul Williams, who I think has done one of these programmes, and
yes,
a guy called Bill Bebb, who sadly died a couple of years ago. But we were all very young, I have to say. I was 23 at the time. So,
wow.
But when Radio 1 actually started, it carried on. It was a network name, not a department name. So Radio 1 started in 67, but the departments didn't form until I think it was 71 or 72, I can't remember. At which point I moved up to Egton House, where the gramophone department had been.
And the very first programme that you produced?
That must have been Pete Brady.
Oh, thank you very much. And very fine voice indeed, the method there. And just one look, the Hollies' old hit song. Just over half an hour to go here on the programme. And, we've got a lot of very nice and very fine sounds lined up like this.
Next up was the Jimmy Young Show, which I know you have particular memories of.
There was an overseeing producer who was called at the time an editor, and that was Doreen Davis. And she had like minion producers, of which I was one, and there were others, Ray Harvey, I think, or Roy Herbert, possibly another one. But we were mainly responsible for being in the studio with Jim. Keeping him in order, as it were, and doing the recording sessions that made avail for the live music element, of which there was quite a lot then, because we weren't allowed to play wall-to-wall records then. We had to balance it all up.
The time is 10 o'clock. You're listening to Radio 1 with Radio 2, and it's the Jimmy Young Show.
Good morning, all. And that's the first lie of the day. It's absolutely terrible down here in London. It's definitely your SOS morning. Showers of snow all over the place. And having, like the rest of all the country, I suppose, slipped and slithered and slid to work, that slides smartly into the first record of the morning. And we will follow the bouncing ball, avec Steve.
The bosses obviously trusted you when it came to trying out aspiring Radio 1 DJs, because they gave you the task of looking after them at the weekends.
Now, that's because I was so nice, you see.
Yeah,
that,
I know it's coming back to
out, yeah.
Exactly right, you see. Hey, this is all becoming very clear now, but I'm going to throw a few names at you and we'll see how many that you remember. I mean, obviously, you know, in the nicest possible way, Roger Kirk. Yeah.
I remember the name, don't remember the
Gary
program.
Taylor.
Gary Taylor, I remember the name, yeah.
Andy Finney, who did at least turn up on In Concert a little bit later on.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have big memories of the programme. I mean, I remember the programmes, but carry on, go on.
I've got one more for you. I mean, I personally, I don't know what ever happened to this chap. Noel Edmonds.
Who?
Noel Edmonds.
Noel Edmonds, bless
you. You were his first ever Radio 1 producer.
Yeah, now that actually does bring back quite a few memories of this particular programme.
How do you do? My name is Brian.
Brian?
Yes.
Said Dougal. Brian? There's nothing funny about somebody being called Brian.
Thank you very much. What's your name?
My name's Noel Edmonds.
I thought so. You're not really Little Red Riding Hood.
No, I'm not.
That's just a nom de plume,
said Florence.
We feel so happy-go-lucky having you around.
We do. I hope you're feeling happy-go-lucky, even ruddy, rosy, and robust.
The best.
Ruddy is not rude. In fact, I hope the vicissitudes of valetudinarianism are far from your keyhole. That means I hope you're feeling all right.
I never know particularly, apart from the fact that he did become famous, was because one of those programmes that I did, it was his 21st birthday, and his parents came up, and I had a girlfriend at the time who came with me, and we went out for dinner together in the evening. So I sort of remember that. Whether he does, I don't know. I'd be interested to know. But he was 21, so that probably give you a clue.
Yeah, we're talking about.
First I say, what we're going to do. Then you say, I don't know, what do you want to do? Then I say, what we're going to do. You say, what you want to do? What we're going to do, what you want. Let's do something.
Right!
It's got to be Radio 1. Good time, happy sound of music.
This is the program that brings you happiness and ebullience and good cheer.
What chair?
What chair?
What chair?
I did not say chair. I said cheer. You know, cheer.
First of all, a chair.
No, I said and cheer. You know, like when you're having a drink. Cheer.
Innkeeper! Innkeeper, wine for my friend.
Is such stupidity really necessary? We ask ourselves.
Okay. So we'll take cream soda.
Polymorphic proportionment to multifarious music. Ah! It's a heterogeneous hemigirl and it comes from Smokey Robinson and those Americans.
Did you have any inkling at all at the time that he was going to go off and become as huge as he did?
Probably, although I have to say he was very keen on Kenny Everett at the time. He did a lot of stuff that Kenny Everett became quite famous for, you know, zany, on-air zany stuff. And in my opinion at the time, he was doing far more of that than I thought was good. Because let's face it, you can't have duplicate Kenny Everett popping up.
And Kenny was still around very much at the time,
very
too.
Very much so, yes. But, I mean, there were signs that he was going to go far, I think.
That's a number called Amorous, and of course it comes from Kiki D, bringing the time to 25 minutes past 11 o'clock. I'm not going to talk to Lindsay Paul just for the moment, because...
You've gone mad, that's why.
You have, really, haven't you? Gone sort of...
It's Christmas spirit.
That's what it is it? Very, very amusing lady. Anyhow, have you been reading those cards?
I have been reading those cards.
You haven't come to a decision yet?
Oh, you haven't. Do you want me to come
to a decision? Not yet. No, right, I really don't want you to come to a decision yet, because I'm going to play a record. If you have just joined us, Lindsay DePaul in the studio, and we'll be sending a Christmas pudding through the post any time now. Here's John Denver.
Before long, you were given the task of producing the very first Radio 1 breakfast show DJ, Tony Blackburn. It was that period as well when Noel was stepping into the breakfast show and Tony was making the move to mid-mornings, and it turned out to be a long partnership, you two.
Yes, when Tony came off the breakfast show, I can't exactly remember the timing, whether he went directly to this slot. I think it was probably...
1973 10, by this stage.
10 o'clock in the morning, was it?
Nine till midday,
thank you.
That's what I'm here for, Rog.
Yeah. But I produced that for 4 years with Tony, and it was quite fun. We had a lot of fun together, Tony and I. He was very easy to work with. There wasn't any side to him. What you saw is what you got. And we had a lot of laughs, and we also did a bit of socialising. He took me water skiing once. He was quite a keen water skier, and he belonged to a club in Bedfont. And the only thing I remember really is he said to me, "One thing you've got to remember, Roger, is if you're going to fall over, you've got to fall over. Don't hang on to that rope, because the more you fall over and the more you hang on, the more dangerous it gets." I started to fall over. I didn't leave go of the rope, and when I finally did, it zapped with power all the way down the front of my legs and took the skin off, which is what he'd worn would happen, and it did. So I should have listened to him even then.
That's the sound of Steelers Wheel, a number called Star. 7 minutes to 12. I don't know why, but whenever I play that record, it reminds me of about 7 or 8 years ago when I was going study with a giraffe. And you're probably saying, that's very silly. How can somebody go study with a giraffe? But it's quite true. I used to go study with a giraffe. I had to give her up, though, because people kept staring at us when we went to the cinema. So I started going study with a rhinoceros.
Radio 1. The national sound of music radio for your enjoyment. That's Radio 1.
Super!
When I get a good punchline, that's going to be a terribly funny joke. 6.5 minutes to 12 o'clock, Johnny Walker at the top of the hour. And at 2 o'clock, David Hamilton. Right now, though, the sound of Neil Diamond.
You'd be doing lots of outside broadcasts as well around the country, wouldn't you? In the radio car, for instance, you were going up to Loch Ness. And you told me a brilliant story about this.
Yes. One of the things I did with Tony's programme, we did go out and about quite a lot. One of those programmes was up at Loch Ness. And in fact, it was in the early, very early days of Radio Lynx. And this young man approaches us and said to Tony, I've got this book. I've written a book about Loch Ness. I wonder if I could give it to you. And I've signed it inside. And Tony has said, yes, of course, that's very kind. Thank you very much. Now, I have that book now. Tony gave it to me, and it's still at home. And inside it's signed, and it's signed by Nicholas Witchell.
The BBC television newsreader.
Royal correspondent.
Of course, yeah, royal correspondent.
More famously. I don't know whether he could recall this moment, but I wouldn't be surprised, to tell you the truth. Yeah. Quite what his interest in the great Loch Ness Monster was, I don't remember, really.
Underground, overground.
One of the things we did was when the Wombles were very big, we had a letter. It makes me laugh to think about this, really. We had a letter from a lady in Huddersfield, I think it was, and she said, our name is Womble, and my two children are getting an awful lot of stick at school. I wonder if you could play a record for them, because their name is Womble. So, at the time, we were looking for any excuse to take the programme out and about. So, we said, well, we'll do better than that. We'll bring the programme and do it from your front room.
Wonderful, yeah.
And Mike Batt, who was head Womble, came along with a Womble suit to add a bit of atmosphere to the thing. So that went very well. Everyone was very happy. The local press locked onto it, and we got quite well covered. The family loved it. The kids loved it. On the way back, we were waiting for trains endlessly, it seemed, at Manchester Piccadilly. And Mike Batt decided to break the boredom of all this. He was going to get into the Womble suit and potter about aimlessly on the concourse to the amazement of people walking about.
Because they were so huge at that time, weren't they?
Yeah. Literally huge, because they were very big. And what was the biggest part of them was the nose. I have this memory. We were sitting in this cafe looking through the window at Mike pottering about. And this is in the days when they had departure boards, which were actually written like timetable programs. Just mounted on a slight angle. And you know, people used to stand and look at these things, and I always remember seeing him coming up behind a load of people from the back, and this great big long Womble nose appearing between the heads of two people who both were gradually aware of this strange orange thing poking through, and it gave us all a great deal of laugh. And them,
in the best position, I think I'll train to be a doctor. That's where they're going to live. That's Sunny, up 5 places at number 9 with doctor's orders, and here's the biggest climber this week. Takes us up to 12:30 in Newsbeat, moves up from 20 to number 8, the Wombles. And remember, you're a Womble.
I know you got wonderful memories of working with Johnny Walker, too.
Yeah, he was good fun. Edgy, I think is probably true to say about Johnny. And he still is, I've no doubt. And he was very much into singer-songwriters, people like Ralph McTell, Colin Blunston, and David Bowie was another one. And we did recordings of their live stuff, which we used in the programme. It didn't go on too long, because eventually the playlist was imposed. Johnny never really enjoyed the playlist. No. He hated it being organised.
G. Simpson, no Christian name, from Corby and Northants, very politely said, would you be kind enough to play a record on your show for my young sister's 8th birthday? So there's an older brother being nice to his younger sister. That's Anne-Marie, who G says would be thrilled to hear her name mentioned on the radio, and she's home from school in a lunch hour between 1 and 1:30. So Anne-Marie, that's brother Gordon or Gary or whatever his name is. Anyway, thinking of you today on your birthday. So many happy returns to the James Taylor song.
Give us an idea then, Roger, about how a typical Radio 1 playlist meeting would pan out.
It was an interesting exercise because we'd all troop in there with our half dozen records that we'd picked out of the 60 releases that week we thought were merited. And of course, each one of us had different sort of coming from slightly different directions. There was a very, very much a division, and there were those on the players' meeting who always felt that Radio 1 should be more credible. And indeed, that's what ultimately, of course, what happened in the end, in about 92-3-ish. But there were those of us who believed that it was a popular thing, and if a record was a hit, we should be playing it. I mean, prime examples of that were people like Brotherhood of Man and Peters and Lee, who used to have hit after hit after hit after hit. And the arguments we used to have about that in the playlist was that, you know, there were those saying, no, we can't play that. That's not Radio 1. That's not what it's all about. You know, viewed from their perspective, of course, they were right, but viewed from our perspective, we were right. So it did make for an interesting meeting every week.
There wasn't really such a thing in those days, though, Roger. Was there of a target audience as such? Niche broadcasting, as of course is how it's developed, it was far more of a family thing in those days.
Yeah, I mean, the target was everybody, to be honest. And I think that what sort of slightly proved the validity of that is the fact that when Radio 1 narrowed its, quite deliberately, narrowed its musical objectives, it lost its audience, and Radio 2 gradually began to take that over. Radio 2 ended up being what Radio 1 used to be, and Radio 2 is the biggest radio station in the country. So, you know, in a sense, what we were doing for the BBC at the time was the right thing to be doing, because it was a big audience thing. You couldn't have possibly got away with it if you were only dribbling in an audience on a minority. I mean, the political arguments about running the networks and how many we should have and all that, and you know, why are we running all these networks and all putting out the same thing, it was always a danger that would start to affect how we'd work. So we needed to make sure that we could say, look, there's the audience, argue with that.
People forget as well that there was a lot of shared programming. You know, shows like David Hamilton in the afternoon were on Radio 1 and Radio 2. Jimmy Young, a programme that you worked on successfully.
Yes, at the beginning it was went across both.
Musically it had to sit in the middle, really, didn't it?
To be honest, I hadn't looked at it like that. Yeah, I mean, that certainly would have been the case.
We got one here from Fields Farm, Renbury Frith, Renbury near Nantwich. And please play a record for our sister Fiona. Dr. Kiss Kiss, please, by 5,000 volts. It's her 10th birthday tomorrow, and we'd like a record today. She always listens to your programme, and she'd love to hear her name mentioned with an hello, darling. Was she really? Hello, Fiona.
Hello, darling.
Here's the thing. 1976 it was, the spring thereof, that you began producing a programme again that was on Radios 1 and 2, much loved, legendary show, and a much missed mutual pal of ours, dear old Ed Stewart, Junior
Ed
Choice.
Stewart.
The
hello,
mailbag must have been enormous for that, Roger.
It was. It was absolutely enormous, and it made making the programme extremely easy, except, of course, that the size wasn't... it wasn't as big as you might imagine, because they were all asking for the same things.
I mean,
the classic Junior Choice things, apart from the pop hits. But there were Junior Choice songs, you know, that everyone would remember of a certain age. You know, Nelly the Elephant.
Yes.
And
Ugly Duckling.
Yeah. I'm struggling to say, there's loads of them.
Sparky, wasn't
Sparky
it?
Sparky and his magic piano.
Yes. You can tell I was a listener.
You were, obviously.
I loved it.
Yeah, there were quite a few. And also Alan Sherman used to do the...
Yeah.
I mean, there were the favourites, and they were really good fun to play as well. So.
People used to send those cassettes in as well, recording little messages and everything, didn't they?
They did.
We've got another tape request. Who is it over here? Oh, here. Oh, morning.
Hello, Sue Pot. My name is Ian Smart. I live at 6 Beltinge Road, Harold Wood, Romford, Essex. On Sunday, the 12th of September, it is my sister Wendy's birthday. She will be 11, and I know she would like you to play Hot Shot by Barry Blue.
Going away with Ed Stewart was an interesting experience. We used to go, and around in November-ish sort of time, late November, we used to go to hospitals and record children, which we'd then use on Christmas Day. And we'd go to Wales, Swansea we went to a lot. Actually, on that subject, we thought one year, we always go to South Wales, we ought to go to North Wales, so we went to hospital in Rio, and they all sounded as though they came from Liverpool.
Yes,
so that didn't work. Yeah. The point of it was really to try to get a regional feel to it. And Scotland, we went to Liverpool, the Alder Hey, is it Liverpool?
Yeah.
So all of those famous children's hospitals, we went round, and, you know, Northern Ireland, we went to Northern Ireland as well. In fact, there's a funny story I can tell you about that. We got our flight delayed, it was a lot of fog, and we were waiting at the airport in the bar, waiting for the flight, which had been sort of delayed from or cancelled for some reason, I can't remember now. But we got chatting to a couple of businessmen, and we started playing Spoof. Don't you think
Spoof? Yeah, where you have to, yes.
I'm struggling to remember how you do it. Now, you have three coins, don't you? And you have to guess how many coins are in people's hands. And gradually we all lost except Ed.
Of course.
Ed was managing to live up to his reputation and not by a round. And then suddenly he did lose. And it was said, Ed, it's your round. And British Airways would like to announce the departure of all passengers. Sorry for the delay. Please go to gate, whatever it was. Oh, dear. Don't worry, lads. I'll buy you a drink on the aeroplane. Well, we all got on the aeroplane, and they got this wide body replacement, and there was quite a lot of empty seats, and these guys were several rows behind us. Anyway, the hostess came up and said, you know, can I take a drink order from you? This is on the British Airways. And she said, that's fine, lovely. And Ed said, you see those guys back there? He said, when you get up to them, don't tell them this is on British Airways, because it's actually my round.
He was just so great, wasn't he? And the thing about it is that all these stories, of course, are true, but in other ways he was such a charitable bloke as well, wasn't he? He did so much for good causes.
I mean, he wasn't anything like, I think he lived up.
Oh, he loved it. He the way that he used to have his wallet on his chain attached to his trousers. Yeah.
Elizabeth Morgan is at 18 Stokes End, Haddenham, Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire, and she'd like all the family to listen to Morning Town Ride. It takes up to 10 o'clock, please, Ed. This has been our theme. Next week, Tony will be changing into something fresh.
Another unsung hero of Radio 1, because you stayed with Ed right to the end, the very last Sunday in 1979. But at the start of the 1980s, somebody had been hanging around behind the scenes for a long time. He was eventually given his break on a Saturday morning, and he became, if anything, typecast in that slot was Adrian John. A lovely warmth about him on air.
Yes, Adrian John. Yes, I worked with Adrian a lot, starting with that programme you're talking about.
Wake Up to the Weekend,
yeah, which, you know, was not exactly a rewarding programme for either of us, really, because it was sort of being used as a trailer bed for, you know, trailing the rest of Radio 1's output, really.
Saturday morning, it's okay, starting up in your favourite way. Music, weather, traffic too, with a hot shop off or an old boogaloo. Disco jive or fans of rock to make their day start right. Wake up to the weekend, 7 a.m, so set those clocks tonight, all right.
But nevertheless, Adrian did a professional job as he always did, and he earned his stripes, and he was given the early show eventually. He never developed much further than the early show, but he did do that for a long time, and including a few Radio 1 road shows a bit later.
Okay, time for bits and pieces on the Radio 1 road show. As usual, we have four people seated on the special Radio 1 chairs on the stage. They've got headphones on so they can hear everything carefully. They have notepads in front of them and pens at the ready. They have spaces to write down the 10 records, which we will hear little snippets of.
When mobile phones were first thought of, he must have been the first person to have one of those things that was a box about... about 9 inches by 8 inches by 10 inches.
They were enormous.
And it had a handset on the top, and you needed, you know, a
huge aerial as well.
Yeah, and I remember him turning up in the office carrying this thing. Oh, I've got this mobile phone, and it was. And the other thing, actually, which has nothing to do with the mobile phone, although it was similar timing, I think, is that you remember that there was a great storm where everything blew over.
Oh yes, yeah, 1987,
something
with
like
Michael Fish on TV.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Well, Adrian fell victim to that. He couldn't get in to do his programme.
He'd have been living in Kent then, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Was it Sevenoaks?
Yes, I believe it
or
was.
Or One Oak, as they call it.
One Oak, yes, I believe he was. And he never made the programme. I can't remember the results of that, except that somebody uncharitably nagged at him for it. I think there was a head of department at the time, who I won't mention, who didn't sort of build in the necessary acceptance of trees in the way.
Well, here we are again. Back to work, and Mike Smith ready to go at 7 o'clock.
Hello? Hello?
Across the UK, Britain's favourite Radio 1.
I was just thinking about how nice it must be for you to come to work on these Monday mornings and come back to civilization.
It's quite nice, actually, Mike. I must say, you sort of miss it after a week, and it's nice to be back in the chair playing all the records.
Yeah, but you know, cut off in the countryside there, all the no telephone, no power.
I've only come in for a bath.
Can I come down to yours for a holiday?
Is that okay?
It sounds wonderful the way it's all cut off.
But Adrian was a good guy. My wife and I got to know him and Joy socially quite well. He had a boat. He had a speedboat, the rib thing.
Which I remember.
Used to take us on for rides on up in the estuary. Not the estuary, really, but in the Port of London where you can go fast.
2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. Time for America's latest hits. In this case, the greatest hits of 1983 on 275.
As well as A the Shades, other DJs you work closely with were Paul Gambaccini and Adrian Just.
And now, live from your living room, it's the Radio 1 Disco Party. And here's your friend and his Adrian Just.
Oh, God, I suppose we're going to have you rabbiting away all the evening.
Oh, no, you ain't. It's non-stop party music and fun.
That's Mike Reed on a Sunday morning.
Every Sunday between 1 and 3. Replacing the records you've lost and delving back to a couple of months, couple of years. Years gone by, my dears.
And also, Peter Powell rise up to his very last programme on the network.
Many Radio 1 producers, many people who've been involved in Radio 1 for a long time and certainly helped me out with my career so far. Starting with the person who actually signed me, I'd like to say thank you to Doreen Davis, who brought me to Radio 1 in the first place. To Johnny Beeling, who's allowed me to stay here. Thank you, Johnny. To my first producer 15 years ago when I did 11 shows on Radio 1 when I was 18, 19, or I can't remember. Tony Wilson, Dave Tate, who has last left Radio 1, is now with World Service. Dave Atke, Chris Lycett, Mick Vilcoich, and Roger Pusey, in that order.
It's an impossible question, I know, Roger, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When you look back at all those years with the network, from, you know, its earliest days right through to the early 90s, is there one standout abiding memory for you?
I think probably there is, yes, and that is was a Radio 1 Roadshow, actually, which I did with Philip Schofield in Plymouth. Now, I worked with Philip on roadshows for about 3 years altogether. He was a delight to be with and delight to work with. He was probably arguably one of the best presenters I've ever worked with, and he was very, very popular at the time. And we did a roadshow at Plymouth, and I want to say also that I love flying, and I used to indulge myself with the flying thing by trying to engage as many external flying objects as I could. I had a friend who had contacts with the MOD, and I developed some of these contacts, and I got quite in with the Red Arrows. And the Red Arrows agreed to do a display at Plymouth after the show, I have to say. We did a radio link thing with one of them flying about, talking to us, which didn't work as well as I'd have liked. But after the show, they did their full display. And Plymouth is a brilliant place to do that. Plymouth Hoe was absolutely packed. You could not see a blade of grass anywhere for miles. And on that programme also was Kylie Minogue. It got massive press coverage locally. It had a massive audience. And because it was such hard work for me to get that together with the Red Arrows and getting the timing of their arrivals right and everything that goes with that sort of thing. And it all worked perfectly. And I remember feeling a great swell of pride about that and a pat on the back for Roger. But to his credit, Philip Schofield put the icing on the cake of all of the roadshows I did, actually.
The producer was Roger Pusey. Kathy Miller was our PA. Thanks to the audiences, thanks to the towns, the councils. Thank you very much indeed to the listeners. The Radio 1 FM Roadshow will be back next year.
Roger, it's so nice to see you again after all these years, and thank you very much for sharing your Radio 1.
It's a pleasure.